The topic of this talk is header space analysis. It's a static check for network, and it's a joint work with George Vagas from UCSD and Yahoo Labs and Nick McKeown from Stanford. Today, a typical network is a complex mix of protocols. There are more than 6,000 RFCs that are defined today, and from these 6,000, a few of them are usually implemented in a box and may operate in the network. These protocols interact in complex ways that cause unforeseen behavior, and as a result, it's hard to understand, manage, and predict the behavior of networks. Even simple questions are hard to answer. Questions such as, can host A talk to host B? What are all the packet headers from A that can reach to B? You can imagine that the network admin is interested to know the answer to this question in order to make sure that the reachability policy of the network is enforced correctly. Another question is that, are there any loop in the network? Obviously, we don't want any loop because loop basically wasted resources in the network. Another question is slice X isolated totally from a slice Y? Having isolated the slices is interesting in many scenarios where security is a concern to us. For example, HIPAA requires that two healthcare network the information from one healthcare, basically patient information from one healthcare network cannot be reached to the other healthcare network. The other question is that what will happen if I remove an entry from a router? So you can imagine that a new admin comes to work and he doesn't have any idea of why these entries are there in the boxes. So he wants to know what will happen if I remove that line. To solve this question, we introduce a framework that we call header space analysis. It's a powerful general foundation that gives us a unified view of all the boxes in the network and a powerful interface on top of that that allows us to answer many different types of questions. With that, let's talk about the header space framework. The header space framework is based on a simple observation. If we look at the packet header basically can be represented as a point in the space of all possible packet headers, and networking boxes can be represented as transformers of these spaces. So these are the steps in building this framework. The first step is to look at packet header as a flat sequence of zeros and ones without any associated meaning to these bits. We don't care whether those 32 bits are IP source or IP destination. For us, they are bits. And we can map the header to a point in a 0, 1 to the power of LS space. Each dimension in that space is basically 1 bit and corresponds to 1 bit in the packet header. I should mention that L is some parameter that we can choose depending on how much of the packet header is of interest to us. If we just want to analyze IP connectivity, maybe we can choose a shorter L, or if we want to do deep packet inspection, L can be the entire length of packet header. And then the second step is to model all networking boxes as transformers of header space. Basically, if we look at a packet forwarding element, what the packet forwarding element does is that it maps on some set of packet. I mean, there are a bunch of rules in the packet forwarding elements, and each rule basically match on some set of packet headers. And if the packet matches, we do some actions in it. So we can represent that match plus action as a region in the input. That the packet match against, and then the transformation basically transform that region and map it to an output. If we have more match plus action, we will have more of these. And then when a packet comes to the network, we find out which region the packet maps against and apply the transformation to send out the packet to the output port. And then the packet goes out from the output port. This suggests that we can represent or model the behavior of all networking boxes using a transfer function. The transfer function basically accepts a packet header and the input port as the input and generate a bunch of header and port as the output. Basically, it gets the packet on the input port, process it, and send it out to the output port. And the reason that we have a set as the output is that we want to be able to model multicast or broadcast in the network. As an example, this is the simplest model that we can provide for an IPv4 router that's only modeling the forwarding. If we look at an IPv4 router, it may forward that particular subnet on port 1, then we will have a rule in the transfer function that says if the destination IP bits in the packet header matches against that subnet 172.24.74, then have the same header on port 1. We may have another entry, therefore one more line in the transfer function, and so on. You may think that an IPv4 router does more than forwarding. That's true, but if it depends on us whether we want to basically model that or not. If we want to, for example, model the TTL operation in the IPv4 router, we can have a transfer function that looks like this. It's exactly like the previous transfer function, except we have that decrement TTL for the output. Or we can even, go to layer 2 and model MAC rewriting. That's also happening. There are two important properties of the transfer function that I should mention here because we are going to use it during the talk. The first one is that transfer functions are composable. Basically, what I mean by that is that we can apply a header and port to one transfer function, get the output, and then apply the output to the next level transfer function and do that continuously. And by doing that, what we can model is the packet forwarding throughout the network. Basically, packet traversal can be modeled like that. So imagine we have that packet on the input of R1. It goes through transfer function of R1, and it transfers the packet. If we apply the output node to the transfer function of R2, we go one hop more. And if we keep composing like that, we can see how the packet evolves through the network as the forwarding happens. The other property is invertibility of the transfer function. I should mention that I'm using function kind of wrongly here. It's actually a map because it's basically having one input and generates more than one output. So, besides from that technicality, let's call all of these a function. So by saying that the transfer function is invertible, I mean that if you look at the packet at the input of the transfer function, which correspond to a point in the domain of the transfer function. The transfer function may map it to like 2 points in output, or we may have 2 points in the input that match to the same point in the output. When we find the inverse of the transfer function, we basically ask the question of, given this packet at the output, what are all possible inputs that can generate that packet? So just to make sure, and this transfer function are all invertible because we know the mapping, we know how the input generates the output, and we can just reverse it. So now we go to the last step of building the framework, which is to develop an algebra to work on these spaces. The observation is that every object in the header space can be described by a union of wildcard expressions. It's obvious. Wildcard expression is like the most general thing that we can represent a set of packet header, and if we union them together, we can represent basically every packet header. We are interested to perform some set operation on these wildcard expressions. We want to find out the intersection of two wildcard expressions, the complement and difference of wildcard expressions. For example, if we have these two orange and blue region, we want to find the intersection and find the gray region, or we want to subtract them or to find the blue region there. So I will explain how to find intersection, and if you're interested, you can read about the other two operations in the paper. The way that we can find intersection is by using the bit-by-bit intersection using the intersection table. Basically, the intersection table says what are the common values of two bits. Like if we have x in one position and 1 in the other position, then the common value is a 1 because x can be both a 0 and 1. So we do bit-by-bit intersection. In this example, I want to find the intersection of 10xx with 1xx0. I start from left to right. I intersect 1 with 1. We get a 1 at the output, and then 0 with x. We get a 0, and then x with x. We just do the process. One observation here is that if we find a z in the output, it means that the output is empty. Basically, they don't intersect. And the z is corresponding to having a 0 in one bit position and 1 in the corresponding bit position in the other wildcard expression. So basically, they are in two different hyperplanes in the header space, if that case happens. So as I said, you can see the rest in the paper for finding complementation and difference. So now let's talk about the use cases of header space analysis. I should mention that these use cases are just a few examples that we came up with. This framework is powerful, and we may be able to find more use cases. So don't take these as all the things that we can do with this framework. So I will try to solve the first question, can host A talk to host B? And the algorithm is really simple. We start by injecting an OLX packet from the input port to the network. What's an OLX packet? It's an imaginary packet that has wildcard expression in every bit in the packet header. It basically represents the entire possible set of packet headers that A can generate. We inject that into the network. It goes through the transfer function of box one, and it may get rewritten or filtered, and we get something at the output. We do the composition. We compose them with the next transfer function, and the space basically changes. And we do that until we reach the destination, at which case we have find all the possible packet headers that reach to the destination. As you can see from the formula on the bottom right, it's basically corresponding to composing transfer function along all the paths that connect A to B. Now the question is that, okay, these are all the packet headers that B will see due to A. What are the packet headers that A can use in order to communicate with B? We use the inverse transfer function. We trace it back to the input and find out the packets at the input, all the packets at the input that A can use in order to communicate with B. So we solved basically two questions, whether A can talk to B, and if it can, what are the packet headers? The other question that we want to answer is finding loops in the network. And again, the algorithm is fairly similar. We start by injecting an OLX test packet from every switch port to the network. And we trace that test packet until it comes back to the injection port. At that point, we declare a loop. I mean, if that happens, then we have a loop in the network. So here is a cartoon animation of what can happen during the loop detection test. We have that OLX test packet going into one of the ports on box one. Box one basically transforms that and sends it out to the output port. Then it goes to a transfer function of box two. It may change shape. Similarly, box three. And in this example, it happened to be the case that packet comes back to the injection port. So we say this is a loop. The packet started from one port, go through the loop network, and came back to the injection port. But is the loop infinite? Whether next round the packet will loop again? To answer that question, we again use the inverse transfer function technique. We trace that packet back and find out what part of the original OLX packet is causing that loop. Basically, the orange region that I marked as the original header space has gone through the loop after, four hops of traversal, come back to the injection port as the blue region. And in order to find out whether the loop is infinite or not, we should look at these two regions. Basically, there are three cases that can happen. The first case is that these regions are separate from each other. We started with the orange region. The orange region has gone through the loop and then came back to the blue region, which is separate. In this case, the loop will be finite because the next round the packet won't loop. If the return header space, however, was a subset of the original header space, then the loop will be infinite because we started from the orange region, gone through the loop, and then came back to some part of that orange region that, loop prone, basically. The third case is where there's a partial intersection, in which case we don't know whether it's a finite or infinite loop, so we need to do more work. The first observation is that part of the blue region that doesn't have any intersection with the orange region is not causing any problem. It's separate from the looping region. So we can basically find the intersection and focus on that smaller blue region. And then for that smaller blue region, we can find the corresponding original header space. And it may end up being in one of the first two cases, in which case we terminate the process, or it may be the case that the basically blue region end up shrinking and shrinking until it gets to zero, in which case there is no loop. The third use cases are checking the isolation of slices. What what do we mean by a slice here? Basically, we think of a slice in two ways. The first thing is fixed slices. We can basically divide hosts into different slices using something like VLAN. We assign this set of hosts to a particular VLAN and another set to another VLAN, and we create slices like that. Or we can have more SDN type of a slice, a programmable slice, where a slice is created on runtime of the network using a mechanism like FlowVisor. These sort of slices can include, you know, different set of headers in the definition of the slice. And why do we care about the isolation? Well, there are many reasons. For example, banks may want isolated slices for added security, or as I mentioned, in healthcare, we have the HIPAA standard that patient records should be kept within the same healthcare network. Or in gene environment where researcher can allocate and reserve resources on a national network, we want to make sure that the reservations, basically the slices, don't intersect or they're isolated so that researchers don't mess up with each other's slices. So back to the question, R2 slices are isolated. So to solve that question, we need to first define what slice means in the header space. So basically, we can represent the slice by its definition, by set of packet headers that belong to that slice. If it's a VLAN slice, it's all packet headers that has those VLAN bits equal to something. Or if it's an OpenFlow type of a slice, it may be any set of packet headers. So it will be a region in the header space. We may have other slices in the network, and they may have other regions as their definition. And may even have more than that. So in order to make sure that the slices are isolated, the first check is to make sure that the definitions are not intersecting. And that's easy. We can use the intersection technique I described earlier to find the intersection. But it's not enough. It may be the case that the packet start on blue slice, but when it gets forwarded to the next hop, the packet rewriting is causing the packet to leak to the other slice. In this example, this blue slice have gone through the forwarding and it leaked to the orange slice. To check for that, here is the algorithm. We apply the header space reservation of each slice to the slice transfer function to see how the slice will change after one hop traversal. And if after one hop traversal, the packet have intersection with other slices, we declare that the slices are not isolated. Just a few words about the complexity of these algorithms. Their reachability algorithm runs in DR squared, the loop detection in DPR squared, where R is the maximum number of rules per box, D is the diameter of the network, and P is number of ports to be tested. And for a slice isolation test, it's ONW squared, where W is number of wildcard expression in the definition of slice, and N is the number of slices in the network. You can see the proofs in the paper. So we showed that that header space analysis is a powerful general foundation. It gives us a unified view of almost all type of boxes through the transfer function representation. We also showed that the header space framework provide a powerful interface for answering different questions about the network. Through transfer function and inverse of transfer function, and also we define set operation as another way to do the queries. Now let's briefly talk about our implementation of the framework. We implemented header space analysis in a library which we called Hassel. It's written in Python and implements a header space class that can do the set operation. It implements the transfer function class, basically transfer function and inverse of transfer function. It implements reachability, loop detection, and slice isolation check. The interesting idea is that these tests are less than 50 lines of Python code. The reason is that the header space class and the transfer function class is such a powerful API that we can write tests quite easily. And it also includes a Cisco IOS parser that can read the configuration of iOS command, basically the output of iOS command and the configuration files, and generate the transfer functions. It also keeps track of which lines in config files generated each line in the transfer function, so whenever a problem happens, we can backtrace it to the problem. We run this on a Stanford backbone network. A few words about Stanford backbone network. We have in our backbone, we have 750K of IP forwarding rule, about 1.5K ACL rules. About 100 VLANs are there, and we have VLAN forwarding on this network. We run the test, the loop detection test, and we find an interesting loop in less than 10 minutes on a single laptop. So here is the situation. We have the red VLAN, which with the spanning tree on the left side, and the blue VLAN with the spanning tree on the right side. We find out that a particular packet that belonged to the red VLAN can get broadcasted on red VLAN and go to the to that backbone router, and the backbone router can rewrite the VLAN to the blue VLAN, and then another broadcasting can happen, and the same mechanism can just happen between the two routers, and the packet can loop infinitely here. The idea here is that we have a spanning tree that's designed to make the networks loop-free, but the interaction of these two protocols using a third-party protocol is causing the problem. A few numbers about the runtime performance. We generated transfer function rules in about 150 seconds from the iOS output. And then we run loop detection tests in less than 10 minutes, 560 seconds. The idea here is that we tested on 30 ports because that was enough to test all the network. And one observation here is that we can quite parallelize these tests because these ports are independent of each other. We can run them on different machines. This is on a single laptop that has 4 cores and 4 gigabytes of RAM. And there you can see the average, mean, and max of per port runtime for the loop detection test. And also, on average, the reachability test takes about 13 seconds to run. So to summarize, we introduced header space analysis, a powerful general foundation. I want to emphasize the general, it's a foundation. It's not, you know, a method that we developed just to answer those questions. It provides us a unified view of almost all types of boxes and a powerful interface for answering many different sorts of questions. We showed that our initial Python-based implementation can scale to enterprise-sized network even on a single laptop. And with that, I want to finish my talk, and I'm happy to take questions.
Chennai Iyengar. So I like the idea. Thank you for the presentation. That was a really nice idea to be able to represent packets in this geometric space. There are some network operations that operate on more than one packets. One example that comes to mind is middle boxes that coalesce packets. Two packets come in, they get coalesced and spit out as a single packet.
That's right.
Have you thought about how you might represent something like that?
So these sort of testing is, I think it falls into the category of dynamic type of test. What we do is that we take a static snapshot of the network. So you're right. Using this model, we can't basically represent or model those sort of behaviors, where the action of a transfer function depends on the states that it will see.
But it wasn't so much about whether you. I was wondering if you had thought about how you could extend that.
Yeah,
maybe so, with one more dimension, I don't know.
Some of the ways that we can go around this, for example, we had that issue with the NAT, is that we can basically model the transfer function as the largest set of operation that it can do. For example, a NAT has a state table that says how is the mapping from an IP basically IP source, TCP source to the outgoing TCP number. What we can do is to represent that as an all wildcard operation. So we really don't care about the exact matching. We just say that okay, just rewrite that part of the packet header. But it depends on. I think there is no general way to represent all sort of these boxes. We may be able to go around that.
Hey, Srinivas from Princeton University. This is really cool work. I have a couple of questions. So one is, I'm wondering if you have, so I noticed the R-squared dependency on the runtime and for the number of rules in every box. So I'm wondering if you could, you have some thoughts on the maximum number of rules for like routers and stuff which actually forward packets based on a forwarding table. And my second question is, so this may be related to the previous gentleman's question. Yeah. So if you have thought about how to model, generalizing this to middle boxes with state, like NAT boxes, mm-hmm. which need the connection state from both sides. So, yeah.
I didn't get your second question. Like what sort
of? I'm wondering if you have thought about generalizing this model to middle boxes which have state.
Uh-huh.
So for example, NAT boxes need to keep track of the current connections from one side.
That's right. Yeah. So to answer your first question, in Stanford backbone network, we know that, for example, we do some sort of, you know, compression in the IP table before we even, you know, try to generate the transfer function. So after those, you know, compression and all sort of things, about 1,000 rule, on the order of 1,000 rule per box is what we see. And it's not surprising because that roughly corresponds to, you know, the number of flows that are running through the network at the same time, or number of basically subnets that's getting routed through the network. It's roughly on that order. And for modeling state, one thing that we can do is that we can basically create snapshots very fast from the network and then do the analysis per snapshot. That's one way to go for it. So to do that, I mean, the runtimes that we have is not quite fast enough that we can do it, you know, dynamically. But one thing that we can do is that we can basically cache some of the intermediate results. So whenever an incremental update change, you know, happens, we can just update the result very fast. So.
Hi, Arjun Guha, Brown University. Yeah. I'm curious if you do any work on presenting the output of these queries to the user. The answer to a question like, what are the headers that can reach a host can be a very complex, unparsable space.
Mm-hmm. So your question was how to present the result to the user. So actually, it's really human readable. Okay. So what you get as the output, I mean, I try to not go through the math and just you know, have a graphical representation of everything. But if you look at the actual output that's coming from the tools that we've written, it's actually, you know, the header, the actual header with some wildcards in it that shows, you know, what kind of packet pairs can reach from, for example, A to B.
Quick follow-up. So do you often wind up with several candidate headers?
Several
what? Do you often wind up with several headers with different wildcards as the answer to one query?
Yeah. When we find when we find the reachability, basically it's based all the packet headers that can go from one port to the other. It may include, you know, several subnets with, you know, several TCP port may be blocked on that, you know, path or this sort of stuff. So it often is not just a single wildcard expression, it's a union of wildcard expression. That's, you know, the most general way that we can represent these spaces.